I'm Wes Moss.
The prevailing thought in America is that you'll never have enough money and it's almost impossible to retire early. Actually, I think the opposite is true. For more than 20 years, I've been researching, studying, and advising American families, including those who started late, on how to retire sooner and happier. So my mission with the Retire Sooner podcast is to help a million people retire earlier while enjoying the adventure along the way. I'd love for you to be one of them. Let's get started. Special guest in the studio today, really actually one of our most popular guests in the past. Once in a while, when we have on guests that'll do guest shows or episodes, Kristen Curcio, our advisor, longtime advisor that I've worked with for many, many years, did a show called Financial Planning Guide back in November. And it's actually really, the numbers are awesome on that. People love it. So thank you for coming back.
Well, thank you for having me.
But this is more fun because we get to kind of go through all this together. I think I was probably on a media hiatus back then.
Yes.
For a couple of months. I got mediated out and now I've been media back for many months now. And we really have, we've had some awesome guests on the show. We've had Mitch Albom from Five People You Meet in Heaven and Tuesdays with Maury. It's so good coming out. Dr. William Lee on the foods that will essentially heal you from the inside and keep you healthy. But this is a topic today really for, you know, if you look at our audience here, we have about 50-50. It's half men, half women that listen to the Retire Sooner podcast, Kristen. And there's a lot of things that you have a unique perspective on because the industry of people in the financial advice business, financial advisors, I don't know the exact statistics, but it's like 99% guys,
right?
It's like it's mostly men advising men and women. And you've got this unique perspective. You have a long career in financial services. You were at Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley. And then I remember talking you into becoming a financial advisor maybe a decade ago.
Yep.
Was that correct?
That is correct. Yes.
Did I really talk you into it?
You did. You did. Kind of.
Kind of?
Yes.
Did you? You kind of always wanted to do it.
I asked a little too, though.
That's true. I think you wanted to kind of get into that world.
Whereas before,
you were in equity sales trading, sounded like very, you know, very, very scary stuff.
Yeah.
Equity sales trading desk, block trades. So you've been a financial advisor for a very long time and you're a mom and you've got two boys. They're very cool kids that I've watched them grow from little dudes to like full grown men pretty much.
Yep, pretty much. My older one is actually getting his driver's license in 3 weeks. So watch out, everyone on the road.
How scary is that?
Very.
Did he get his permit like right at 15 and then?
About 2 weeks after his birthday, he got it. So now he is just finishing up his driving classes, like on the road driving classes, and then he'll be able to get his license coming up.
For every parent, it is nerve wracking. I don't remember our parents being as scared about it, Kristen.
No, my parents were pushing me out the door.
They're pushing you out the door.
They could not wait. Drive.
Get out. And we wanted to get out too. And that's also, maybe that'll come into our conversation a little bit too, is that generationally things are a little bit different. Kids leave the house later by a long shot today versus when you and I were kind of getting kicked out to go to college and get out of the house. And now kids have Uber and maybe the world's a little more dangerous. I grew up in the country, so there wasn't much to worry about. It was not a big deal to go drive on back roads anyway. Today I live in the city. It's a totally different ballgame.
Yeah, it really is. And a lot of kids don't even want to get their licenses anymore.
I've heard that. I've heard that. I've got one who just turned 15, so I've got a little bit of time.
Yeah,
he may be in the Uber generation, but I think I wanted to get to. And I was thinking today as we were sitting down that when we talk about women's finances specifically, there are unique challenges when it comes to women in financial advice or women in investing, right? So much of the conversation when it comes to investing, I think is maybe just inherently and almost default directed toward guys.
Yes.
And that creates some problems. I had a wonderful interview. I think it was the first interview ever on Retire Sooner podcast a few years ago was David Bach, and he wrote a book from The Automatic Millionaire, and he sold millions of copies of all of his best-selling books. I interviewed David Bach on the Latte Factor, but he's also very well known for Smart Couples Finish Rich, Smart Women Finish Rich. And he's got a really unique perspective around this on women specifically have some things they really need to think about. So for all the women and the ladies listening today, I really, this episode is for you to try to buck the trend of everything when it comes to finances, money, and investing, always directed towards guys. That's missing half the equation.
Yep, absolutely. It definitely is.
So what is, and Big David Bach, by the way, was, and I praying for him to be healthy, recover. He was in, he just got out of, he lives in France, or he lives in France, Florence in Italy. And one of the things I interviewed him about is traveling. And he kind of did this sabbatical that turned into living for a couple of years in Florence, like living out everyone's dream. We actually talked about healthcare there. We talked about how he was really pleased with the healthcare system. And he ended up with bacterial meningitis and was in the hospital for like over 2 weeks. So he just got out. So I'm praying for him to continue to have a speedy recovery. I know he's home. I wish him very well as I'm thinking about him doing this interview here today with you, Kristen. So, you know, with that, before we even get into specifically what women face that's different than men, when you as a female financial advisor, how often, and when you have a new meeting or just your client base, is it just the husband?
That is a great question. It's far more than I would like it to be. So,
like, give me a percentage, like roughly.
Yeah. So I would say probably 60% of my meetings are just with the man.
And that's even, so is now, are these single men? Or are you talking about, this is a husband and wife,
husband
it's
and
still
wife.
Just the husband?
Yep, still just the husband. And more times than not, they will tell me they have begged their wife to come with them, and she just really doesn't have any interest in coming.
Mm. You know, I guess if you really, if I think about the same question, it's almost as though in the early years when I'm, let's say, getting to know someone, it usually is husband and wife. And then after a little while, maybe like 2 or 3 years, it starts to become more just the husband.
Right.
And maybe it's because the wives don't like me or I don't know, but, or maybe just inherently, maybe if, well, that's what I want to ask you. What is that dynamic? Why is, I mean, do women just not want to talk about money? That doesn't seem, or they want to talk about money in a different way or context maybe, or what is it?
I think for the most part that they're just intimidated by it. So I think that they think they won't ask the right question or it'll be too complex for them. They'll sit there and not know what to say. And I think that that really worries them about coming in for a meeting, for yeah. sure. I think also a lot of these women in that particular demographic, they...
Oh, so you're talking, you know, again, so, demo. Think about, well, that's a good point. The yeah. demographic you're talking about is like 60, 55 up.
Exactly, exactly. So if you think about it, a lot of those women probably grew up in homes where the mom did not work and the father took care of everything money related. Yeah. And so they didn't see their moms being active at all in the financial situations in their homes growing up. And so they probably have gone on to have the same thing in their own.
It's funny. I think about Lynn, my wife, and talking about money. She would, it's almost like how she looks at me with golf, and she'd be like, you couldn't pay me to go play golf. It's so boring. It's like, seems like the most boring thing in the world to her. We were just talking about this. It's a little bit like that with, like, if it were coming to investing, it's not that she's intimidated. It's just for her, it's like golf. She's like, please. The last thing she wants to talk about is investments and dividends. And she's interested in, she actually likes to talk about business. So we'll talk about the podcast and the company, and we'll talk about things that arise all the time when it comes to business, and that involves money and it involves taxes. She's always interested to hear about taxes. But when it comes to the thought around investing in specifically, that's where, again, it's almost like she's just very, like, she's more bored by that than like golf. She's like, I don't like, just, you couldn't pay me.
Yeah, exactly.
To come play golf with you.
I feel like that's like 90% of women. Yeah. I really do. And even in my conversations with my friend groups and women my age, no one wants to talk about it. They just, again, I think they feel like they don't know enough to talk about it, or they really just don't care, except for that's where the whole problem is that they have to care. It's so important. Women need to know what's happening in their financial lives and feel empowered by the knowledge that they have.
Is it true? So again, it's often, more often than not, way more than 50% of the time, it's just the husband or the man coming in. Even we're talking about couples here. And then we haven't even gotten to single ladies at this point. But we've got the things that I always hear around women in investing is that women are really more risk averse and they're more conservative investors. They are adverse to losing money as opposed to guys that are maybe out there more risk-taking. Is that true?
I think
and do you have any examples of husbands and or wives? And are they different when it comes to investing?
Yeah, I definitely think that they are. And it's funny because if we do take an example of somebody, of a couple that has come in together, the conversations that you have between the husband and the wife and then them together are so different.
Oh, what right? do you mean? So you're talking, if you talk separately with the husband and then
they come in together.
What is that like?
Well, because just what you just said, I think women are much more risk averse. They're way more nervous about losing money. They want to make sure that their nest egg, that they're going to have it forever. They're not doing anything that's going to change that. And I think men, they like to make money and they like better returns. And, you know, they worry when it goes down, but they're really happy when their money goes up. So I think it's just a much different, it's much different talking to each of them for sure.
So imagine the compounding effect of this is that women less interested, women participate a little bit less, and then women live longer.
Well, a few things there. So A, women live longer. But B, no one has a crystal ball and no one knows what's going to happen. So there could be a divorce. Mm-hmm. There could be the unexpected death of your spouse. That's why it's so critical that women know what's going on. There's so many questions that they need to have answered before anything, and God forbid anything like that does happen, but they want questions answered before that does happen. And I mean, I don't mind sharing. I just hit the 50 hump a few months ago, and yeah. I know personally that I'm seeing a lot of things going on in my world with my friends, people that I know. Again, unexpected divorce. A lot of people are becoming empty nesters. They realize they don't really like each other any longer. Mm-hmm. They're getting divorced. I'm seeing more people get sick at an early age. Mm-hmm. And so these things are happening. And in the meantime, a lot of women, they might not know if they have any investment accounts or where they're held. They might not know if they have a mortgage left on their home or if there's any outstanding debt. There's a lot of things that they don't know that they really should know before something bad happens.
Or even, right, when you're talking about not just beyond just not knowing what accounts are where, but what's the title? Is this a joint account? Is everything in Bob's name, or does Sarah have? Sorry if I keep using Sarah and Bob here, but yeah, is everything in Bob's name and nothing in Sarah's name? Or maybe that's just there. Let's go do this. What are the important things if you are a spouse or you're a woman mm-hmm. listening to Retire Sooner? And first of all, I would think the folks listening probably do have some interest in finances and investment, or else they wouldn't be listening to this podcast. Now, right. granted, it might be for the Mitch Albom interviews and the Eat to Beat Disease interviews or the Kristen Curcio interviews. But at the same time, what are the challenges that, how do we overcome that? If you were to start from new today, what are the things, like a list of things you should go find out for the family finances? Give me some examples.
Absolutely. I mean, you could start at the very, very beginning with your banking accounts, mm-hmm. your checking and savings accounts, and how are they titled?
Title.
And do you have the passwords to them? Do you know how to get in? Do you know where they are? Investment accounts, same thing. Do you have the passwords? Do you know how they're titled? Are they retirement accounts? Are they after-tax accounts? Are they joint accounts or individual accounts? All those things are super important. Your mortgage, do you know where your mortgage is held through? Do you still have a mortgage? How much do you owe on your mortgage?
Do you have a second mortgage?
Do you have a second mortgage? Exactly. What about any debt that you have? Maybe you don't even know. And not because perhaps your husband is trying to keep it from you, but maybe you just haven't asked and you figure he's taking care of it. But are there any outstanding debts out there? You should know about your insurance.
Insurance, something that, again, talk about going from uninteresting to just plain almost impossible to want to talk about. I just got a big thing from Chubb, which is where I do for homeowners and all these other things. It's a giant packet. I feel like they send it every quarter. So it's like I start to ignore it after a while. It's car insurance. It's homeowners insurance. It's umbrella insurance. And I went through that packet. I was cutting out the ID cards for the cars to give Lynn her ID, the registration, insurance card. And I'm flipping through it. It was like cyber insurance. It had like carjacking insurance. It had ransom insurance for the children. It had cyber bullying insurance. And I'm like going through this. Listen, Jake, my 10-year-old, is like, he's like, Dad, are you cyber bullying someone? And I was like, no. I'm like, this is insurance in case we get cyber bullied. He goes, in case you cyber bully someone? I was like, no. In case we get cyber bullied. And we have to defend ourselves and get lawyers in order to be...
That's crazy.
I was like, this insurance is not going to help me fund a case so I can bully someone on the cyber world. In the cyber world. Anyway, I don't know how we got off on that tangent. But again, it's like a stack. It's like a telephone book that comes in the mail. And nobody wants to talk about it.
No. Oh, no.
By the way, what it was something about... Again, you would think I should know all this, but I'm not an insurance expert. It was about the loss of, in case you were carjacked, you were worried about the person coming back and finding you, it was replacement cost for you to go like live somewhere else.
Wow.
So it was something, or it was like all, it's a whole category still a pretty new emerging category. Not carjacking, but things like cyber and bullying insurance. And again, I could be talking totally out of turn here. Maybe we need to, that's what we need to do. We need to do an episode on insurance, and the reason it won't be boring is because beyond life insurance and term insurance and homeowners and umbrella, which we all see farmers commercials on every day in Allstate over and over and over again, there are so many other types of esoteric insurance like cyber,
right?
And all of these other insurances that Jake was laughing at. That would be an interesting episode.
I think that'd be great.
But again, this is a husband, wife. Do they sit there? Lynn literally left. I was like, hey, I'll give you your insurance card. She's like, great, whatever.
No one wants to talk about it. I promise you. But they should know. But people need to know. Or if you have long-term care insurance, you know, that nobody wants to talk about that either. That's horrible. That's horrible to think about down the line. But it's important to know if you have it. It's important to know if you have any like stock certificates somewhere, or are there I bonds in the bank somewhere, or any kind of additional assets outside of the normal investment assets and banking assets. Oh, what else is out there? Do you own real estate? And to know the ins and outs of those real estate beyond your primary home.
Okay, so a lot of things come up here as we talk this through. The another adage that I've heard over the years is that women, and I think I've written about this and what the happiest retirees know, that women visualize, men think of money as a river. Mm-hmm. Women think of money a little more like a reservoir.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's part, I don't know, do you think of it that way, or do your clients think of it that way?
Yeah, I think so. A little bit more. Yeah.
So it's like if you have a reservoir, you're like, I don't want it to evaporate and go away.
Exactly.
Like, that's it. This is all I got. Let's be really protective and careful. I get it. Whereas if you think of money as kind of this river, then maybe you're a little more less risk averse because you feel as though, oh, we're going to continue to have money coming in.
Absolutely.
Whether that's from working or part-time work, or again, big fan of dividends and income investing. That's part of the equation.
Yeah. Well, I think too that right there, you just kind of hit the nail on the head, is that that's why women also need to be involved with the overall financial planning with their husbands, so that when they are involved with that, they're going to learn a lot of aspects of financial planning that they might not know. So they might not look at it as a reservoir any longer. If they can get to the point where they can look at it as a river, then that's a good thing.
They're less worried about it running out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, tell me as an example, on a financial plan, as an example, when you, if you end up in that exercise, and not everybody wants to do a big full-blown financial plan, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
Some people really want to just focus on what are my investments doing. I think you're much better off understanding you're investing towards a goal.
Absolutely.
Which means there should be at least some sort of plan, whether it's a one-page financial timeline or a 50-page e-money plan.
Yep.
But when you're doing planning, in mm-hmm. addition to investments, Kristen, which I know that most of the time you're doing planning as well, is that a something that people do, a couple does together?
Not enough, but I think that once the conversation starts, I think a lot of times the woman realizes how important it is mm-hmm. to do it together. Because we're also talking about, again, not just the investments, but your overall planning from here until the end, right? Yeah. And so that could include a lot of different things along the way. Different things are going to come up in their lives, or they're going to hit, say, Medicare and Social Security and all the different things that a lot of people just don't necessarily think of. And then, but they have to, right? So for the overall plan for all of those things, it's so important. And also to realize what you want your money to be for, right? So
this goes back to goals, mm-hmm. right? So this goes back to the question around, first of all, well, I think you brought up a really good point. If you haven't had, if let's say one spouse, it's not always the wife, let's say, that's just not as interested.
Right.
But I think that act of sitting down with somebody and doing even a simple plan, or maybe something more full blown, to your point, you're thinking about different phases.
Yep.
So they go, hey, what's the next phase? And then that brings up, oh, well, in the next phase, we need 10 grand a month to live on. Okay, well, that sparks another conversation. Well, wait, what does that include our mortgage? Oh, no, that'll get paid off. Does that include long-term care? No, that'll get, yes, that includes long-term care, or it doesn't. So I think the act of doing that together, because one of the statistics that I continue to recall around happy retirees and happy retirees in financial planning is that your average couple, happy retiree, spends at least 5 hours a year in financial planning.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, that doesn't sound like a lot, but think about an entire hour, once a quarter or a little more than an hour every quarter, sitting down and doing a little planning, or sitting down and doing planning, a little bit of that can go a long way. Oh, imagine sitting down and talking about, this is like, it's time to eat your spinach.
Yep.
It's a little bit of spinach planning, which is, you know, you got to get through some of these. They may be a little boring. There may be conversations you don't love to talk about. Like, nobody wants to talk about death. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to talk about long-term care. But if you do, then now you have really eaten your spinach, mm-hmm. and you're almost forced to talk about a lot of these bigger picture financial things that are so important. Like, hey, where is our money? How is it titled? Hey, honey, what are the bank account? Where are all our accounts?
Yep, absolutely. And also during that time, it gives you the opportunity to determine if for some reason you're not on the same page as your spouse about something. Like, for example, I want to go travel the world when I retire, and my husband never wants to leave the house. I don't have a husband, but if he did and never wants to leave the house, we'd have a problem. He probably wouldn't be my husband. So, right? So if you're on totally different pages of what your money's for and what the financial plan really is, where it's to get you, then that needs to be discussed.
Okay, so so this is a cool thing. You're talking about goals and couples that might have totally separate goals.
All right, actually, I have a perfect example of this. I have a couple. He is from the South, and he loves to hunt. And he envisions his retirement hunting all day, every day.
Tree stand.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And then his wife is from the Northeast. She's a New Yorker. She lives in the South now, of course, but she's ready to, like, go at it. She's spunky. She's fun. She's just ready to travel the world, especially after 2 years of, you know, being down with COVID.
Yeah.
And so they're really not on the same page.
Yeah.
And they might wind up doing a lot of things not together in retirement. And that's okay, as long as they can get over that and they can get through that. But I love it when clients have the same thoughts about retirement.
Yeah.
Like I have a couple who they moved down to outside of the Tampa area. Mm-hmm. They'd both always wanted to move there. They've been in Atlanta for a really long time over the traffic. They move there. They are so happy, and it was their dream together to go there. And now they are just living their best life. And if they're listening right now, they'll know who they are. So it's just, I love seeing them.
Are they, what about the kids? Do they have adult children?
They do.
And where are the adult kids?
They're still in Atlanta.
Still in Atlanta.
And so they come up when they can to see their kids, but they have decided that they want to live, again, they want to live their best life and they feel like they're in the best place for that.
Have you ever seen anyone, or do you have any examples around people that were not on the same page? So going back to your example, that they ended up figuring a way to work that out? Or did it ultimately lead to them just kind of understanding that they're really just in different worlds? And you're a marriage counselor.
Yeah, no, I do think at that point, though, that people do wind up finding an in-between. And maybe that the man who thought he really did want to hunt every day and the woman who thought she wanted to travel everywhere, they actually realized that there was a really good in-between.
Yes. Yeah. I think you get this envision where he was like, oh, I'm just going to go. I'm in South Georgia and I'm just going to hunt.
Completely.
And she wants to go bop around America and all over the world. I'll let her do that. In the reality, she probably gets him to go on some trips.
Yep. Exactly. Yes.
And he probably doesn't hunt every day of the week.
No.
Of course not.
And of course, retirement is always a little bit different than what you envision it to be, right? You think it's going to be one thing and then it winds up being different and it's changing all the time too.
Let's talk about when you're talking about same goals, and I go back to this and I think about Lynn and I were talking about spending time in Michigan, and I like it a lot. Northern Michigan, actually, I love it. But I have this, I also love going out west. I love Park City as an example, or I love being out west. So if it were up to me, I think I would say if we're going to spend a month a year somewhere or have another home, it would be in the West. It'd be in Utah. It'd be Park City as an example. And her point is, well, if we had a month or two out of the year, I would want to be in Northern Michigan. She would want to be in Northern Michigan. So those two, I'm not that opposed to it, but that conversation is helpful.
Absolutely.
And I guess it goes back to going around your same big picture goals. So what, as a couple, we think about, what are some of the really bigger picture goals that we've got to wrap our arms around when it comes to that next phase? You called it end of life. I call it next phase. Let's plan for the end. Let's plan for the next phase, which would be what?
Yeah, well, I mean, number one, just from a really basic perspective, is how much money do you need? Do you both agree on the same amount of money that you think you spend on a monthly and annual basis? That's just the number one question, I think.
Yeah.
Because if that's out of whack, then there's got to be a way.
Everything's out of whack.
Then nothing else can work well, right? So it's coming together on that. And I would say most couples come together on that really, really well, especially if they've been married for so long. They know each other's spending habits. They know enough to know that they can get there. So I would say that that's number one. And number two, it's the biggest thing, I think, is what are you going to do, right? So meaning, what's the meaning of your money? Do you want to travel, or do you want to use your last dime, or do you want to leave it to your heirs, right? And making sure that you're on the same page about that, because maybe he feels like, hey, I've worked all this time, I want to use as much as I can, and our adult kids are doing great and they're successful and they don't really need anything. And maybe she, as the mom, feels differently. Like, I still want to leave my kids something and my grandkids something. And so getting on the same page about those things are really important.
Yeah. Have you seen that be a little less on the same page?
Yes.
Longer term than the spending number, as you said, spending, people feel like they come together.
Yep.
But ironically, if spending is the same, you would think long term would be the same, but you're saying legacy wise is maybe not always in agreement.
I think sometimes it's not. Yeah. I mean, I can't give you an exact percentage, but I do think that there are definitely situations whereby you see, again, one spouse that says, let's spend. I mean, they don't want to run out, but they want to use it on themselves because, again, he or she, they've been working for all this time and they'd like to go ahead and use it. And one of them feels softer towards the children or the grandchildren and feels like they need to do more for them.
It's funny. I have a doctor couple that I've worked with for a long time, since their kids were little, and now they're through in college/medical school. And the dad, who's a surgeon, wants to fully pay for all of college, all of medical school, and even a big supplement during the lean years of residency when you're not making a bunch. Mm-hmm. And the mom, who's also a physician, wants to is the opposite view. She wants them to pay for their own medical school, have debt for the medical school, and have give them no money when they're in residency and they're not making a lot of money. So I have seen some, and they have very, very different thoughts around money for the kids.
Yes. Yep.
Speaking of money for the kids, on average, I find there's a couple of things when it comes to children and retirement. One is that happy retirees tend to live closer to more of their children. So once they hit the 50% mark or more, they are anywhere from 2 to 5X more likely to end up in the happy camp, right? Which is interesting here. So if you have 4 kids, you want to live at least near 2 of them.
Right.
And or if you have 6 kids, you need to live at least near 3 of the kids. We're doing some heavy math here. Now, you can pick the kids that you like. You can pick so that's one. The other thought is that I've found in our research that happy retirees actually spend less per month on their adult children. So they spend on average less than $500 on their adult children per month, whereas the unhappy group spends more than $700 per month. So it's an interesting dichotomy here is that, and again, I don't know the exact answer of why that relationship is what it is. I think that what I would glean from that is that you end up with the more independent your kids are, the happier the retirement, as long as you live near them.
Well, that totally makes sense.
Yeah. You want your kids to be totally independent as humanly possible, but you also want them to live nearby.
I love that.
Independent.
I want that.
Yeah, I know.
Right? I want that. Yes.
I guess that is what we all want.
I want
kids off the payroll. You don't need me, but we're still going to live in the same city or we're still going to live driving distance.
Yeah.
And I would think that you see couples. Let's go back to women. This is where, again, let's focus back on women. Do you see a difference between husband and wife when it comes to the kids?
I think that women definitely want their children closer. I mean, I think that the men do as well, but I think that the woman is in hopes for grandchildren and she's like, that's her retirement plan is
or,
to
or
be
at least a
right?
big part
or part of
it,
of it right?
Not everyone though, right?
No, not everyone. But some.
Yeah. It is interesting. Do you have any examples of grandparents thinking they want to be grandparents and then realize that, I'd rather be traveling than hanging out with grandkids 24/7?
So I do have an example of someone. She moved down here from the north to be near her daughter and thought that her primary job, I say in quotes, would be to take care of her grandchildren. She was single and she met the love of her life at 70. They got married and she's off traveling and having the best time ever. And she's not beholden to those grandchildren. She loves to see them, of course, right? But it's become a whole different ball game since she met her man. And so, yeah.
Whoa, that is interesting. Love finds a way.
That's right.
Retirees that are married I go back to the research. You don't have to be married to be a happy retiree. However, I do find in the research that if you are married, you're about 4 times more likely to end up in the happy camp. Also interesting that I see no change in happiness levels with a divorce, meaning that one divorce. The statistics you show as you get into multiple, if you're talking 3-4 divorces, then unhappiness levels do actually rise. But when it comes to one, I always say there's one marriage mulligan, no problem.
That's right.
Hey y'all, it's Mallory Boggs, the producer for the Retire Sooner podcast. From an investment standpoint, the world is changing. We've gone from no inflation to hyperinflation, 0 interest rates to much higher interest rates. All of this changes the dynamics for stocks and bonds. So the question for you, are your retirement accounts ready for it? Have you adapted your investments for these major shifts? Do you know what kind of income your 401k account is going to pay you in retirement? If not, maybe it's time for a new perspective. The Retire Sooner team is here to help. If you're ready to talk, reach out to our team and we'll help you take a closer look at how you can generate income in retirement and protect yourself from inflation. We'd love to hear from you. Again, find us at wesmoss.com. That's WESMOSS.com.
We've been talking about couples and we're talking about levels of happiness, married or not married, divorced, not divorced. But what would be a, what would just be a couple of thoughts if you're single and you're doing retirement planning? If you're a single woman, is there anything that you should be thinking about that's that that maybe is different, or is this a whole nother episode when it comes to single ladies?
So I think it is an additional episode, but what I would say is that I would encourage all single women to find someone to help them if they really feel uncomfortable doing it on their own. Mm-hmm. And a referral, find somebody that you can truly trust, because unfortunately, women still do get taken advantage of a lot in a lot of things. It might not just be in the financial services industry, but it could be going to buy a car on your own or somebody coming to do work on your house. Mm. There's a lot of different things. So we really have to kind of stand up for ourselves. But again, I think using a referral, maybe talking to a woman if it makes you feel more comfortable. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a definitely have a number of female single clients who all of which whom I adore. And actually, our relationship has been so great because they've used it as an educational experience. And that just makes me so happy because it gives them a lot of independence and it a lot of confidence.
Yeah. Are they, have they gone through some sort of life event typically? Is that,
yes.
is it mm-hmm. usually after a divorce or are they widowed? Is that, how does
both? Yeah. Both of those primarily. Yes. And I think that, you know, on both sides for a lot of them, a lot of these women, I've seen them go through a real fear factor after that's happened. And that's why kind of how we started this conversation is what women need to know. They need to know a lot of things so that God forbid the unimaginable happens, that they at least have the knowledge so that as they're going through potential grief over a divorce or grief over a lost spouse, at least on the financial side, they're not so worried and so scared about what that looks like because they already have a lot of that. They already know a lot of that.
Maybe we've learned here that women are maybe a little bit more conservative investors, and maybe that just means they're a little more patient mm-hmm. for one reason or another, maybe a little more risk adverse, which doesn't make them, it actually makes them maybe even better investors. So that's one. Two, we maybe determined that it's less that this theme that women themselves aren't, quote, good at finances. Maybe it's that they're maybe just not as interested in finances. And it doesn't take, to your point, it takes a little bit to overcome that. Mm-hmm. But part of that is just getting, having a relationship. I think the other thing too, Kristen, is just being, just sitting here talking to you, it is a great reminder of just having a rapport about finances with somebody is really help. It's really important.
It's so important. And I think that the other thing I would say is what we talked about in terms of goal planning. Goal plan with your partner, sit down and have those conversations, make them, you know, five hours throughout the course of the year. It's a short amount of time. Have a glass of wine and sit down and discuss it and make sure that you're on the same page. Not too much, but sit down and, you know, and make sure that you all are on the same page.
So to kind of recap that, women are maybe a little more conservative, but patient investors. If they're not overly interested, and that just statistically we've seen this, is that you're saying that even with your married couples, it ends up, it's very often that you're meeting with just the husband,
right,
which is not the way it should be.
Right.
But getting together with a little bit of planning can go a really long way because it almost forces you and your spouse to be on the same page when it comes to your point, one, number one, spending.
Mm-hmm.
And then number two, your legacy. Where does the money go over time?
Right.
Let's talk about something a little more fun. Do you see big divergences in where people want to live? Let's talk about second homes. We're in a 2022 economy. I think about how expensive real estate has gotten, and I have clients always talking about second home. Hey, I want to get a place somewhere in Florida. I want to get a place somewhere, usually in Florida.
Or the mountains. Do you find that? I get a lot of in the mountains.
Yeah, where do your people?
Florida.
I get Florida and South Carolina.
Okay.
Are the two. And then I've had a handful of families move totally to the West Coast, where it's more expensive, higher taxes, the whole thing, always because of their kids live out there.
Oh, that makes sense. That would be the only reason that would make sense.
Every single case of somebody that's moved out west to California, mm-hmm. it's always because they have multiple children out there and they're following the 50% rule.
Interesting.
50%. Right? Live nearby. Driving distance between 50% of your children and your retirement levels go through the roof. But where are people moving?
I agree. Florida. Again, I've had a lot of people that want to move to the mountains, like North Carolina. Yeah. I've had Asheville, a couple South Carolina, definitely. But for a lot of people, yes, you're selling your house for higher than you ever thought that you're going to get. But where are you going to go? It's a conundrum, right? So, I mean, it's a question that I get asked all the time. Actually, I have somebody that moved to Charleston. So, yeah, I mean, I think that there are some really great places like that.
We'll call them the Smith family. When you live in Atlanta,
right.
It's kind of remarkable how only an hour and a half north of here, we're talking 90 minutes away, you are in another world where it is cooler temperature-wise, mm-hmm. the elevation goes up, and you're in the mountains, and it's not that hard to find a mountain lake. Now, it is now, because right. all those houses are bought up, and just like a lot of places in the world, it's hard to find a lake house. But let's call them the Smith family. They moved to the mountains from Atlanta. They live in, let's call it Ellijay, Jasper. Right. There's all these great little Blue Ridge, all these wonderful places up north. And lived in a relatively quiet little mountain community. But they thought, like everybody else, that they were supposed to go to Florida where all the fun was and wanted to go down to the villages and thought they'd live in the villages. And they went down, they rented a house for 3 months. I believe it was 3 months to kind of get a feel for it. Within 30 days, they were out of there. They said, this is not for us. And every time I see them now and talk to them, I always remind them. I say, remember you guys almost thought you wanted to live in the villages? 15 years later, they're still in the mountains. They love the mountains. And you're talking about two polar opposites, right?
Polar opposite.
The villages, it's crowded. It's thousands of people. They're all playing water polo, right. driving around in golf carts. It's like crazy town. It's like a college campus. The mountains are, it's more serene. It's just a different life. I always think it's funny that it's funny to think that we think we should go somewhere maybe in retirement, but this is kind of a fun conversation. And that may be another thing is that it is a fun conversation to think about where you want to live.
Oh, I think it is too. I think it's great. And a lot of people don't want to stay here. They're ready to go and experience something different.
Do you see couples, and do women are just as high propensity to move? Where do they want to go?
Yes, I think so. Yes.
Like where? So, still back Florida? Everybody wants to go to Florida?
I think still back Florida. I think somewhere more remote, like Virginia. I have one client who that's kind of her grand master plan is to go to Virginia.
The Shenandoah Valley.
And
it's
just
beautiful.
Just outdoor, easy, not trafficky kind of life. So, but I mean, I would say overall, I feel like Florida is always the magic answer for most people.
I want to go back to one more. I want to revisit longevity.
Okay.
Longevity is a very real thing for now, even though the latest census came out with life expectancy in America just dropped a couple years because of we've had a lot of issues with the opioid crisis and then COVID and I don't know, red meat. I don't know. Everything is not good for us anymore. Right. That's why we're having on health experts here on Retire Sooner, Live Longer. But it is very real. Have you seen that in practice with women just living longer and living out their lives without their husbands?
Yes. And I think that not only the financial aspect is important to touch on with that, but also what do they want to do? So this whole time they've thought that they were going to have a partner to do something with. And so it's so important. These women will be healthier and live longer if they can get themselves involved in something. And I think women are pretty amazing at doing that. Mm-hmm. I think that when women pass, men have a much harder time than when men pass. I think women really, they have good girlfriends, they get involved, they volunteer, they go to the library, they do things. So I think that for all women, again, it's so morbid, nobody wants to think about it, but it is important to think, what would happen? What would happen if? And what do I want? What would I do? What would my life look like?
Can you give me an example of someone who had to did by the way, when it comes to Kristen Curcio, nothing sounds morbid because Kristen's so sunshiny. Nothing sounds all that bad coming from you. Give me an example. Do we have an example of someone that, again, maybe they were widowed much sooner than they were widowed, and life really changed, and kind of walk through what that looked like.
So I do have a friend, and her husband passed away extremely unexpectedly at 60. They were both 60. And everybody was shocked. It was just, no one could believe that it happened. She is the nicest lady. She's got adult kids, but in their 20s, so not super adult, but adult. And she actually, I know she went through an incredibly difficult mourning time, and she actually posted on Facebook about 2 weeks ago that she had met somebody, and they're traveling and they're doing wonderful things together. And, you know, when you look on Facebook and all the comments, and there were probably like 350 comments about how happy that people were for her. But
yeah.
Think about when that first happened to her husband. So unexpectedly, I'm sure her world was in complete turmoil, and to be so young for that to happen. My mom passed away at 60, and my dad was 66, and he had to deal with that, all that too, but he got really involved in things, and, you know, he never thought that he would be 66 and his wife would have passed away. But I think that if people can just can move forward and get involved and do things and be active, that it's so important.
So you've seen women be really resilient and
yes.
recover
mm-hmm.
in these very traumatic periods.
Yep.
And how long does that take, Kristen? Have you seen it all different, all across the board?
Yeah, I think it's completely different. I think it's different on depending on the person, depending on what kind of family structure they have or they had outside of the spouse. I think always that children and grandchildren help tremendously in those things.
Yeah, the support of family
yep.
gets people through these really awful, awful times and can be resilient around them.
Yeah.
So you're saying it's not uncommon that, let's say, a woman who's maybe just not overly interested, like Lynn, my wife, just wasn't overly interested in investments. Have you ever experienced someone that has almost seen the light when it comes to, wait a minute, I kind of like this investing stuff, or I see how it works and they're more interested? Has that ever happened?
Absolutely. So I love these stories because I'll have women come in, and first meeting, they'll tell me they don't really know much. They have very little knowledge on things. They just want me to take care of things. And again, I do try to educate people as we're having our meetings, right? Because it's a two-way street. You know, I want them to be getting something out of it other than just me investing their money. But they'll go home and they'll say, well, you know, where should I look? Or I see all these stocks in my account, but I don't really know what the ticker is. Where should I look? So it's like, well, go on Yahoo Finance and you can look it up, and then you can see any news on the stock and you can look up anything like that. Or you can go on Morningstar and look up anything that you want. And all of a sudden they're online and they're calling me and they're like, I think I'm understanding this. Like, I understand my portfolio allocation. I understand why I'm invested in the things that I'm investing in. And then all of a sudden they've got a small brokerage after tax account set up aside, and they're doing their own little trading in the account, and they're watching their own stocks that they're buying, just again, as an aside. So I love that. I think that that's so cool.
It is. It's almost like someone who maybe has gone a while without taking an interest all of a sudden sees the light.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. I get it. I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we understand things, the more we can consume them, and they're less intimidating. And then the light bulb goes on, and investing can, maybe it's for some people it's fun, but also it just brings some comfort with the understanding. It maybe this goes from it used to be a reservoir, and now wait a minute, it's really more like a river. And there's some comfort in that, and it makes you feel as though you understand how this 30 or 40 page financial plan, intimidating, works, and what's funding it, and how all of this is working. And I think there's such power in that. And I think this is where you have this special skill set. Depending on what statistics you read, Barron's, as an example, estimates that 80% of financial advisors are men. 80%. Which leaves 20% are like you, Kristen Curcio, who really have this unique perspective for helping women. And whether it's single women, as maybe that's a whole episode on itself, or when it comes to husband and wife, really getting the spouse involved that may not have been interested to begin with, you help them. There's such power to that. So Kristen Curcio, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed it so much.
Hey, y'all, this is Mallory with the Retire Sooner team. Please be sure to rate and subscribe to this podcast and share it with a friend. If you have any questions, you can find us at wesmoss.com. That's WESMOSS.com. You can also follow us on Instagram and YouTube. You'll find us under the handle Retire Sooner Podcast. And now for our show's disclosure. This podcast is provided to you as a resource for informational purposes only and is not to be viewed as investment advice or recommendations. This information is being presented without consideration of the investment objectives, risk tolerance, or financial circumstances of any specific investor and might not be suitable for all investors. It is not intended to and should not form a primary basis for any investment decision that you may make. Always consult your own legal, tax, or investment advisor before making any investment or financial planning considerations. Please refer to the full disclosure in the podcast description for any additional information.